Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. Make sure you're following us on social media, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our new text and voicemail line is, as always, 331-979-1369. Once again, that's 331-979-1369. Let us know your thoughts, comments, questions, all to that line going straight to our email. So last night was a bizarre game. I felt like this Grizzlies-Bulls matchup ended up being way closer than I actually anticipated it to be. I felt like for what we saw with the Grizzlies and what we knew about the Bulls coming into it, Justin Holiday was going to start. Obviously, Robin Lopez was still inactive. But still, it just had that kind of feeling where I went into watching this game and I was like, you know what? I bet you anything, the Bulls are probably going to 15-20 piece the Grizzlies, and this is going to be another bad win in terms of lottery slot. For me, I ended up actually getting a lot of enjoyment out of this game last night. Markkanen, Dunn, and Levine showing out, playing phenomenal basketball together. Of course, after we talk about that yesterday, Matt, on this episode, we talk about how there was kind of some struggles with Dunn and Levine, and Markkanen looked to be a little bit off. Of course, all three of them have really spectacular nights against the Grizzlies. What'd you take away from this game last night?
I mean, it was ugly basketball. I subjected myself to watching the entirety of it, and it was not fun. You mentioned the fact that the trio that we've been talking about needing to build some chemistry, Markkanen, Dunn, and Levine, all had good, respectable games. It was actually the first time this season that all three of them have scored 20 or more in the same game. Markkanen 22, Dunn and Levine 21 apiece. And they were all very effective for the Bulls in the plus-minus column and all shot well. Markkanen 8 of 14, although I'm pretty sure like 6 or 7 of those field goal makes were dunks. Bulls were really getting out and running against Memphis, especially when Memphis had a string of turnovers in the first half. Levine 8 for 14, Dunn 6 for 11. Dunn did have a 6 turnover day, so you never love to see that. But I mean, really, I was even surprised to go back and look and see that Dylan Brooks put up 29 for Memphis. Marc Gasol had 17. I mean, this Memphis team is just bad. They are outshining the Bulls and every other team in the league right now when it comes to what a tanking team looks like. The Bulls, other than letting Memphis go on a 10-0 run in the fourth quarter and letting it get close in the end, really had this game in hand the entire time. And the Bulls did so while still turning the ball over 20 times. The Bulls had 20 turnovers and still won fairly easily. That's how bad this Grizzlies team is.
Yeah, I was watching this game last night, and obviously props to Dylan Brooks. He was one of those guys, along with Jordan Bell last year at Oregon. Both of those guys seemed like players that, you know, could be contributors on NBA rosters, and both of those guys' second-round picks are showing out. So I was surprised by Dylan Brooks's 29 points last night. Another thing that I had to note, too, is some of these younger guys that the Grizzlies do have that I remember being highly touted picks, like one Deontay Davis of Michigan State a couple years ago. I don't know if you remember this, Matt, but he was the guy that walked out of the NBA draft after he wasn't picked in the first round. Do you remember this? Where he actually ended up going the first pick in the second round, but he decided to leave the NBA draft. I remember him. Yvonne Robb was actually another big time prospect that ended up on this Memphis Grizzlies roster. Wayne Selden Jr., if you can remember Wayne Selden's uncle at Kansas. Remember he had the big clock on him. It said Selden time or Wayne time when Kansas was good. So a lot of, I guess the Grizzlies have a team of Hall of very good college basketball players.
That all either were second round picks or undrafted in recent years.
Yeah, right. And then you add Ben McLemore to this mix, who didn't really figure things out in Sacramento, didn't get the type of playing time, and didn't turn out to be the player, I guess, in Sacramento that they thought they were going to be. This Grizzlies team is brutal. They've only won 5 games all season on the road. They're 5-26. But overall, I thought the Bulls had a pretty nice night last night. Obviously, touched on Chris Dunn's 6 turnovers. You hate to see that. But he had 3 steals, 9 assists, 3 rebounds. He was a plus 12 in the plus minus. He had 21 points. And the one thing that I was really happy about in this game for Chris Dunn is he got to the line a lot. He shot 10 free throws, which was the most of any Bull on this team. And that's what really, in these last stretch of games in this season, I want to see Chris Dunn do more of. Drive to the basket, try and finish at the basket, but also try and draw fouls and get to the line. It's something that I also talked about with Zach LaVine, too. I think his pull-up and shooting and his off-the-dribble type of basketball that he likes to play, and he's the most effective when he comes off the dribble and takes a shot on 5 or 6 dribbles. We talked about that a few weeks ago, but Zach LaVine too, I want to see him get to the line more. But this was a really effective night for Chris Dunn. Bobby Portis turned it around too. I thought 15 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals in 30 minutes of play was pretty good for Portis in a starting role. But overall, I was satisfied the way it went in terms of watching these guys play up against another team that's tanking, kind of being able to get a sense of where the Bulls sit in a litmus test. And for a lot of these teams, and we're going to see it again against Atlanta, a lot of these teams are way behind what the Bulls are doing. And I think this brings up a larger conversation of, I hope the Bulls don't end up stuck somewhere where they're drafting again, and this might be the biggest possibility, 6-10, somewhere between 6 and 10, and they end up getting a very good player, but not that franchise-changing player that maybe one of us all thought they were going to get at the beginning of the season.
Well, yeah, I mean, with that win, you look at the Tankathon standings. Now the Bulls sit at 22-42, 4 games back of Memphis and Phoenix, and 2.5 games back of a bunch of teams that are all tied right now at 20-45. Brooklyn, Orlando, Atlanta, Sacramento, Dallas, all 20-45. The Bulls already have 2 more wins and 3 fewer losses than all of those teams. So, I mean, there's still time. There's, you know, we have, 17 or 18 games left. There's still time, and obviously a loss to Atlanta would definitely help in that regard. But, I had very little hope that the Bulls would find a way to lose to this Memphis team, just because looking at what this Memphis team is throwing out there in their rotation in recent, you know, weeks with all the injuries that team has sustained, even this Bulls team, you know, they weren't going to lose to that Memphis team. But I mean, you mentioned the strong night for Dunn, and specifically you mentioned him going and getting to the free throw line, which obviously is a great thing. You like to see Dunn being more aggressive. The other thing that I liked watching this game last night is that he and Markkanen seemed to be on the same page a lot and developed a good amount of chemistry, whether it was fast breaks or Dunn penetrating the interior of that Memphis defense and then finding Markkanen for easy looks. I mentioned that Markkanen was dunking like crazy all night. Chris Dunn was the big reason for that. Dunn found Markkanen on a lot of easy looks, and I liked to see that. And I guess on the flip side, I was frustrated at times when it was Zach LaVine's turn to be the ball handler, and there were a few opportunities, especially a handful I noticed in the fourth quarter when the Bulls were trying to hold off Memphis, who were making a run, that Markkanen was developing an advantageous matchup in the post, and LaVine was just blind to it. There were a couple, one in particular, and I think it was when it was like a 2 or 3 point game late in the fourth, Markkanen had his man pinned down very well on the block and was calling for the ball from LaVine, who was out dribbling just behind the 3 point line, and LaVine didn't even see him and tried to drive left and ended up dribbling into a double team and turned the ball over. So I liked what I saw as far as Dunn and Markkanen working together in that game. But LaVine and Markkanen still seem to be missing on some pages.
Yeah, and I feel like that's going to take some time. And obviously, you and I have discussed this before. But it's nice to finally see that these young guys are going out there. And the three pieces that we've talked about all season, since the Butler deal has been in place, since it was moved in the summer, it's like if there was one, one goal among all of Bulls fans, people in that front office, coaches and players, it was to try and develop Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, and Lauri Markkanen together on this team. Take a baby step forward. And I feel like for a lot of this season, you know, the ups and downs that the Bulls have had and sort of the player development that they've been looking at across a lot of different players like Bobby Portis and Denzel Valentine, and then you include the three that were a part of that trade, I feel like overall, I sit here and think that I have a little bit of sense of relief. And I don't know about you, Matt, but watching Chris Dunn play and see his game transform from what it was in Minnesota, and I think people, when they're watching the Bulls, especially Lauri Markkanen, and we talked about his sort of shooting slump that he was in, and people might have been a little bit worried. Same with Zach LaVine, his defensive weaknesses. I think that's all going to take some time to build up and to find strengths. And I think it's more so on Fred Hoiberg, too, is to find strengths in matchups that are advantageous, not only on the offensive side of the ball, but the defensive side of the ball where you're going to have a lot of holes. I mean, with Zach LaVine, there's going to be guys in times where David Nwaba is going to have to play legit minutes, or Chris Dunn's going to have to cover multiple positions in order to kind of cover up what Levine's weaknesses are on that side of the ball. But I guess I have a little bit of a sense of relief when I'm looking at some of these other tanking teams. And I know I shouldn't rest on the laurels of what the Bulls have done right now, but you look across the league, and I know we said this about a month ago when we were looking through tanking teams. If I had to look at any other roster that's currently constructed in this tankathon, I don't think I would take any other team. I don't think I would switch what the Bulls roster is currently right now with any of these other teams. Maybe Phoenix, but I mean,
Are you discluding Philadelphia in that? Are they too past the trust the process part?
Yeah, Philadelphia's,
because I trade with Philly in a heartbeat.
Yeah, Philadelphia's not allowed to be a part of this because they're taking on that Lakers pick. So I'm not even including them. So if you want to throw the Lakers in there, the Lakers would be an interesting conversation. I'm pretty sure that was a team that we had talked about. If there was any team that we'd like to see, if you could possibly swap either roster of any of these tanking teams, I think Philadelphia was, or Los Angeles was probably the closest one we got to. But I don't know about you, but I look around the league and I'm like, I don't think I would trade what the Bulls have done right now and what the pieces that they have and hopefully will develop in 2 or 3 years with any other roster right now. You look at Memphis's roster, we're going to get a look at Phoenix before all said and done. The Bulls still have 2 games against the Nets. They got a game against Orlando, a game against Atlanta, and a one against the Charlotte Hornets and one against the Knicks. And they even have one against the Nuggets too coming up. So you're going to get a lot of looks. And I pledge Bulls fans to do this as you're watching games over the next 2 or 3 weeks. Take a look at these tanking teams that the Bulls are going up against and watch some of their best players on the floor. And you tell me if you would swap players or swap rosters with anybody around the league. And I've been having a hard time, even watching games that the Bulls aren't playing in and watching some of these other teams, I've had a hard time saying, you know what, I would swap rosters in a second with that team. And maybe that changes with the draft positioning that you have in the 2018 summer, but I don't know about you, Matt, but I don't think I would change rosters at this point with any other team that's tanking.
I mean, it's none of them seem to be above and beyond in a better situation than where the Bulls find themselves. Are there pieces on some of these tanking / rebuilding teams that I'm jealous of and I wish that the Bulls had? Yeah, like I would love a Devin Booker or you know, as much as I still feel confident that the Bulls made a great pick for their team's needs and the modern NBA and Fred Hoiberg's offense in Markkanen, I'm jealous that Dallas is the team that got Dennis Smith Jr. And I think that he has a great, bright NBA future ahead of him. But other than those two guys, when you're looking at the rosters of Memphis, of Brooklyn, of Orlando, of Atlanta, of Sacramento, I'm really not all that jealous of any of the young pieces on those teams. Like, and I guess if you count New York, and obviously with the ACL tear, it's a huge question mark, but I guess I would throw Kristaps Porzingis into that category of a young player that I would love to be in a Bulls uniform. But that's about it.
Yeah, like you talked about, there's a couple players on each team that are intriguing. You brought up Devin Booker on Phoenix. You can look at places like Dallas, like you brought up Dennis Smith Jr., Kristaps Porzingis, even Kemba Walker on Charlotte. I think the only team that I would say I would have some intrigue with is the Denver Nuggets, but the Denver Nuggets really aren't, I wouldn't consider them, they're not a tanking team at this point. They have a lot of young assets that they're trying to squeak into the playoffs. Obviously, right now, that's not working out. They're fighting for that last playoff position with not only the Clippers, but the Utah Jazz to try and sneak in the West. I think if I had to pick any team, though, 1 through 14, I think maybe the Denver Nuggets are the most intriguing with Jamal Murray and Gary Harris in their backcourt. But honestly, outside of that, I don't see a whole lot where there's a collective unit of three or four guys where I said, you know what, I can wait 2 or 3 years to see how these guys develop, and I think that core is going to be better than any of these other cores that are on these tanking teams. And so I guess that brings me to the point where even if the Bulls don't end up with the top five pick, and I know I've said this over and over and over again this entire season, that the season would be a failure if the Bulls didn't end up in the top five of the lottery. I'm not ready to change my opinion on that, but I think I feel a little bit better about the way LaVine has played, the way that Dunn has come along, and the progression and the better start we saw from Lauri Markkanen at 20 years old than maybe I had at the beginning first couple months of the season. I still think that for the way the Bulls constructed this roster, if they don't get into that top five, it's still kind of a failure of a season. But I'm hoping, crossing my fingers too, that their scouting department is good enough that they're going to take a look at some of these second tier players in the case that they do end up 7 through 10 or 7 through 11 in this lottery draft, that the Bulls can come away with another pick sort of like Lauri Markkanen. But I know with the draft history of the Bulls and some of the picks that the front office has made over the years, Bulls fans might not be too confident in that, but I mean, they didn't do a bad job scouting Lauri Markkanen, and so there's a couple other pieces as well.
I feel like, and you know, as much as you and I call out the Bulls front office when they deserve to be called out for something, I feel like so many Bulls fans, and you know, with the hashtag FireGarPaxNation out there, are so quick to say this front office sucks at the draft. They don't do, you know, their scouting team is bogus, and you know, look at all the busts, whether you wanted to talk about Nico or Marquise Teague or trading up to get Doug and then trading him away, and you know, the Tyrus Thomas, LaMarcus Aldridge fiasco, Tony Snell. Okay, yeah, there's some examples of the Bulls, you know, picking in the draft and it not working out all that well. But you think the Bulls are the only team in the NBA that have missed on draft picks? No. That happens to everybody. Everybody except maybe the San Antonio Spurs, who, you know, now like DeJounte Murray has replaced Tony Parker in the starting lineup, and they all look like geniuses for taking him very late in that draft. But hey, guess what? The Bulls looked like geniuses when Jimmy Butler turned into a star, borderline superstar. And does anyone in Chicago need reminding that he was the 30th and final pick of the first round? What about Taj Gibson, 26th? Bobby Portis, who this season is looking more and more like the guy who everybody was calling a steal at 22 in the first round a few years back. And let's not forget that the Bulls do have that pick from the Pelicans. Look, I absolutely would like it if the Bulls would manage to bump themselves up somewhere closer to the 4 through 6 range of ping pong balls as opposed to where they are now at 8. Yeah, that would be ideal. But even if this Pelicans team that has gone on this insane win streak, hashtag Nico, They've won 10 in a row and now are projected to pick 25th. But that Western Conference is very tight. They're 38 and 26. You know the number of other teams that have 37 or 38 wins? Because it's like seven other teams. A little bit of a losing streak, and that pick that we're getting from the Pelicans could go from 25 bumped up into the late teens. That can still happen. And you think about the fact that the Bulls, in recent history, have shown that they can find talent deep in the draft. So for every Bulls fan out there who's saying, oh my God, like we're going to miss out on the top three pick, not even top five, we're screwing up the tank, the Pelicans pick is turning to shit, pardon my French, it's still possible that the Bulls can add two very good players in this upcoming draft.
Yeah, the whole Pelicans thing, Anthony Davis is doing us absolutely no favors with destroying every team he's seen in sight over the last 10 games and taking the DeMarcus Cousins injury and using that as fuel to the fire. And you look where the Pelicans sit now. I mean, what are they, the fourth or the fifth seed in the West at this point? So, yeah, Anthony Davis, man, come on. Help out your home team. Help out your hometown team in the Chicago Bulls by not going off every single game, especially late down the stretch when we're looking to have that pick be somewhere in the teens. But you're right. I mean, this Pelicans pick, like, there's still 17, 18 games left in the season. Like, things can happen. And like you had said, between where the Pacers sit, or I should say where Minnesota and Oklahoma City sit at 37 wins, that's the 19th pick right now in the draft. And where the Pelicans are at 38 wins, that's the 25th pick. And I mean, you can even go all the way up to Portland at the 26th pick. So there's a lot of movement, a lot of fluidity that's going to happen over the next few weeks. So definitely keep an eye on the Pelicans as we move forward towards the end of the season. The last thing I wanted to touch on too, Matt, with the whole NBA draft as a whole, is I think we all get so caught up with the talent that we see in college basketball and where they're playing. And I think a lot of times people forget that More often than not, when teams take guys that end up being superstars, it's more about fit than anything else. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons why you see a lot of guys at the top of the lottery end up flaming out and becoming busts, because they're not in a situation or in a place where it benefits their game the best. I mean, you can look across the board of the last five drafts and go through the NBA lottery and pick out probably a handful of guys in each draft that said you didn't work out. And how many of those guys can you point to saying, you know what, that was probably not the best fit for that guy, or it was probably not the best fit or best coaching situation at this point? So a lot of that happens more often than not than we think of. So when the Bulls are scouting some of these guys, and when it does come this time to decide where to draft at, I think best fit ultimately and where and what type of style that each team is playing is definitely going to be a huge factor into all of this. And so I guess I wouldn't be totally bent out of shape if the Bulls ended up at 6 or 7 in this draft, but I don't want to fall anywhere past 8, because then you get real dicey. You get to the point where you're taking borderline second tier players and maybe even drowning out to the third tier of some of this group. But I'm hoping that the Bulls can maintain sort of this I guess momentum that they have in the draft, and with scouting some players and bringing on players that they think will be advantageous to their future. So I'm not totally lost out yet, and there's a lot of games left to be played. And if you go through the Bulls' schedule over the next 3 weeks, they've got 7 games against tanking teams, and the rest of the 12 teams are playoff-bound teams. So I'm hoping the Bulls do right by those 12 games and don't win out, decide to be advantageous with Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday, find a way to kind of maneuver, massage that a little bit.
We didn't mention that when talking about that Memphis game. How annoying was that? Justin Holiday gets thrown back into the starting lineup and immediately goes 3 of 3 from downtown, finished 5 for 5 for 14 points in 17 minutes. Like, dude, screw you, Adam Silver.
And you can see why at that point. Like, it played out in the first, I don't know, it played out in the first half where you saw like Justin Holiday knocking down shots and you're like, oh man, the jig's up. Justin Holiday, yeah, he was sitting.
No tank win happening tonight. Justin Holiday's raining threes.
So yeah, I would say take a look at that Bulls schedule over the next few weeks. It's definitely going to be interesting. And I want to see what Fred Hoiberg does to try and kind of massage some of these tank matchups that they do have. Like I said, they got to play the Brooklyn Nets twice still. They've got to play the Orlando Magic. They still got Memphis for another game. They're going to see Phoenix one more time. They're going to see Atlanta on Sunday. You're also going to get the New York Knicks and the Charlotte Hornets, and you're also going to get Detroit twice before the season's over. So very interesting times for the Bulls, and a lot of movement still going to be able to happen here. But Matt, the other thing that I want to talk about today on today's episode is a pretty good article written by NBC Sports Chicago's Vincent Goodwill, and it talked about the mutual respect that Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn both have for each other and the foreshadowing of some team conflict and some, I guess, inner team conflict in that locker room that's bound to happen as these guys kind of progress and try to figure out where the pecking order is in terms of leadership on this team. And while we've talked about how Chris Dunn wants to be that guy, he said it back in December, he's repeated that same thing in January and February to the media. At the same time, when Zach LaVine came in, he was the first guy to really say, you know, I want to be the face of this organization. I want to be that leader that the Bulls are desperately looking for. So do you foresee any problems with a good inner team kind of conflict, a struggle, a battle for leadership as the years go on, maybe 2 or 3 years down the road? Because there are incidents where you can point to where that's probably not the best idea or the best thing to happen for a young tanking team. And then there's other respects where pecking orders end up happening and guys grow stronger and better for it. So what is your opinion kind of on this? And what do you foresee in the next couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it'll be anything as dramatic as the Rose and Noah versus Butler power clash. I don't think it'll be anything as bad as the Butler and Wade versus rest of team and Rondo power clash. This Bulls team in recent years has had some pretty ugly power struggles in the locker room that were made fairly public. And the team did their best to try to brush them under the rug, but, you know, we're not stupid. We all heard what was going on. They could deny it until the cows come home, but everybody knew that those rumors were out there for a reason. And I think it's interesting that Dunn and LaVine both spoke to that recently about, you know, yeah, it's got to be somebody stepping up and not necessarily being the bad guy, but calling out players, making sure we're holding each other accountable. And you and I have talked about the fact that LaVine wants to be that guy, and he seems like he has that personality and that charm to sort of be the face of the franchise, quote unquote. And I think that as much as it would be great for him to be that, I am, you know, I'm Mr. Bulls, let's all rally around me, I honestly think if Chris Dunn is going to be the point guard moving forward, and I know we all still have questions about his offensive efficiency, but you can't dislike what you've seen from Chris Dunn on the defensive end all season long. And really, in the modern NBA, if you can have your point guard be one of the better two-way players, including being one of the best perimeter defenders in the league, that can take you a long way. And I'm not giving up on Chris Dunn being that guy yet. If Chris Dunn is to be that guy, I think Chris Dunn also has to be the vocal leader of this team.
It's funny you mentioned vocal leader, because the quote from Zach LaVine says, after being asked about expectations going forward for 2018 and 2019 and how that sort of struggle goes between players and trying to figure out that pecking order, he said, you have to be more vocal. You have to be more assertive. You have to be in that role. He said, whether I'm 1-for-12 or 10-for-12, I got to be that dude to do that, or somebody has to do that. There's no way you can be a contender or a winning team without that type of personality. And I think playing off of that, Dunn's quotes sort of, I feel like, reminisced and kind of paralleled to what Zach LaVine was saying. And I feel like there can be more than one leader on this team. So this is what Chris Dunn said. He said, I'm pretty sure you can't show me too many teams that have so much high talent that don't go through some growing pains. It's tough. He said, trying to figure out how many touches people are going to get and who's going to be aggressive. He said, I don't normally worry about the pecking order or the hierarchy of the franchise and looking around the league. He said, I don't really worry about that. I don't get into that, who's the best player and all that. We all have to be leaders for this team. We have to be leaders in different ways. And it's a matter of time to see how we gel out. Right now, we just keep playing. And I think that is like the best quote from Chris Dunn. And these kind of contrasting personalities in sort of, I feel like Dunn's kind of that quiet assassin, whereas LaVine's more of the face, the approachable, the funny guy, the the personality that sort of thrives in the NBA, the way that sort of Jimmy Butler in his early years was like everybody liked him and he was more vocal. He was going on a bunch of different shows. He was nationally known. And with Chris Dunn, he's sort of, I feel like, that introvert type of leader. And you see that. You see that flair come out. Like, I think back a couple months ago when Chris Dunn hit that shot and then he flexed on everybody, looked at the crowd and was swearing, was all hyped up. Like those little moments, those pockets of moments for Bulls fans, I think show a lot of positivity, not only from LaVine, but from Dunn as well. So do you, I guess I would ask you, do you feel like there can be multiple leaders on this team? And do you feel like teams can grow in that way? And is there teams that you can think of around the NBA that sort of had multiple leaders on their team and have had success in that way?
Well, I mean, yeah. Hello, Tim Duncan, Tony Parker.
True.
How many years of success did the Spurs have with those two leaders? And Tim Duncan being perhaps more of the quiet, reserved, strong, follow my lead, lead by actions leader, and Tony Parker being the floor general and calling out orders. The Bulls can have something similar because that worked very well for the Spurs for, what, close to two freaking decades? You can have multiple leaders on a team. Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen both led in their various respective ways when those 90s Bulls teams were winning and winning lots of games and lots of championships. You can say that the Heatles of the 20, you know, to from 2010 to 2014, LeBron and Wade both led in various ways and were both leaders of that team. It's not you don't have to have one de facto leader, but I think that as far as the locker room, who is like the guy that they turn to when they're trying to get a stop on the defensive end in the late in a close game? Who is the coach slash player on the floor telling everybody where to be? Because if you asked anybody in the Bulls locker room or asked anybody in Chicago in the height of the Tibbs-Rose years, who the leader of that team was, nobody said Derrick Rose. Nobody said Jimmy Butler. It was Joakim Noah. Joakim Noah and Luol Deng. Those were the leaders of that team because they anchored the defense and they were the veterans that everybody respected and everybody came to in the locker room. If there was an issue, those were the guys that were talking it out. And I think that the Bulls have potential in LaVine and Dunn to have two leaders with different demeanor and different skill sets and abilities. My one hang up is that if you're talking about who the floor general is, we want to see more strides from Dunn being the floor general on the offensive end. And we also right now are terrified that when it comes to playing defense, Zach LaVine ain't leading anything. There is no way that Zach LaVine will ever be a leader on the defensive end of the floor. And I think that in as much as the NBA is all about flashy, you know, Splash Brothers and spread offenses and James Harden and the Rockets and all this, real leaders lead on the defensive end. And Zach LaVine will never be that.
I've got to throw this out there because all the examples that you brought up and even the one that just popped up in my head about multiple leaders on a team, you know, the one constant that you brought up the San Antonio Spurs with the Tony Parker and Tim Duncan teams. Who is the coach of that team? Greg Popovich. Who is the coach of when Michael and Scottie were here? Phil Jackson. Both Hall of Fame coaches.
Oh, and you need to have a coach that can control multiple egos and juggle multiple egos. That's absolutely true.
So and, that's, you know, my question.
Doc Rivers did it with KG and Paul Pierce and Allen in Boston. Like, you need to have that kind of coach. I'm pretty sure I didn't even mention Fred Hoiberg. And I still don't know if Fred Hoiberg can be that guy if Dunn and LaVine and perhaps, you know, a little bit down the road, Markkanen all of a sudden become guys that have big egos attached to themselves. We all saw how Fred Hoiberg handled a locker room full of egos in his first 2 years in Chicago. It did not go well.
Yeah, so that's what I'm thinking, like looking around the rest of the league, like trying to think of teams that really, first and foremost, look for their leadership from their players. And I feel like a lot of those teams that you had mentioned, like they're is some cohesion in terms of what the coaches do too. Like Greg Popovich, Phil Jackson. You even look at the Golden State Warriors team with Steve Kerr. Like, yeah, you can talk about Klay Thompson and Steph Curry and Draymond Green being leaders before Kevin Durant had come in, but you still have an anchor of a coach that is not only progressive and willing, but a really good coach, and it's got a lot of really good philosophies. So I'm also thinking around the league is like, what teams have gone through multiple coaches but kept the same type of leaders in terms of players for a long term? I'm thinking of guys like John Wall with the Washington Wizards. They've had a couple coaching changes, but him and Bradley Beal seem to have clicked and have been the leaders of that Washington Wizards team. I also think in it...
Yeah, but I mean, are the Wizards ever taken seriously in the playoffs?
But that's what I'm asking. No. Like, Which direction is this going to go? And I guess it, the larger question is how is Fred Hoiberg going to develop as a coach in terms of leadership as well? Because you could end up with a guy like LaVine and Dunn being sort of in that role where Bradley Beal and John Wall are without a coach that isn't strong. And then you just said it. Like, what have the Washington Wizards accomplished other than a couple playoff wins over the stretch since they've been there? I think about a team like the Bucks too, with a young Giannis. They've had a couple coaching changes as well. So I guess I'm trying to look for a team in the NBA that has quality leadership from their players and that stays constant with a coach that sort of isn't that number one leader or isn't highly respected around the league in terms of a guy like Greg Popovich or Phil Jackson or Steve Kerr or even Doc Rivers like you had brought up with the Celtics. Can you think of a team that's around there that has players that have been constant but the coach hasn't?
I mean, not really. I mean, I guess there is... you could make an argument that multiple, like two examples of that involve Pat Riley, Miami Heat teams in the early years that weren't really ever getting it done as far as getting all the way to the finals and winning championships, and Riley, you know, coming in and taking over, and then also the Lakers in the pre-Riley and then Riley and then post-Riley years, where they were always contending, always relevant. So like Miami pre-Riley, Riley, and post-Riley, and then the same thing with the Lakers, I would say, are the, like the two examples I can think of teams that for a long stretch of seasons were at least playoff relevant and had turnover at the head coaching chair.
The only thing I can say too now, and I guess this is where my point is going towards, is with LaVine and with Dunn, is in terms of a leadership power struggle, I think there also needs to be another step taken from Fred Hoiberg in his leadership skills too. I think growing with those two guys on the floor as leaders, but also growing as a leader in a coach too, is very important. And I think about it too, if I had to do a comparison of what I would like Fred Hoiberg to turn into in terms of basketball mind, the way that you're getting the most out of all of your players would be a guy like Eric Spoelstra. I know he got crapped on a ton when they played the Bulls with the LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh thing. And when they all left, everybody had questions about whether Eric Spoelstra was really a coach or if he was just kind of a guy that was there, you know, as a placeholder.
Are you kidding? Eric Spoelstra is one of the best coaches in the NBA.
Exactly. That's what I was getting to that point. And with LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh all leaving, Eric Spoelstra has turned into one of the best coaches in the NBA. And he's getting the most out of all these guys that, you know, for a while, a lot of people were like, what are the Miami Heat doing with all these role players, guys that aren't really superstars in the aftermath of what LeBron had left them with? He's turned a lot of those players into really legitimate stars and, as a whole, been a really good coach. So I guess I would like to see Fred Hoiberg take the steps that Eric Spoelstra has taken, and obviously Eric Spoelstra had a little bit of help with being able to win and have some success with a generational talent in LeBron, but I don't think it's far off to say that I would like to see Fred Hoiberg step up in the same way that LaVine and Dunn have to for leadership reasons on this Bulls team, and if he can turn into somebody like Eric Spoelstra, that would be amazing for the Bulls. And maybe I'm just sitting here with a pipe dream, but I think it's important not only for the two players to figure out what the pecking order is between in that locker room, but also for the coach to take another step in their progression as a leader.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think we need to see more steps taken by Fred in that realm to prove that he can be a leader at the NBA level, and not just a leader of a bunch of young kids who, let's be honest, we're not asking a whole lot from them this season. And Fred's done a good job handling them this season. And you can even point to certain improvements that he has helped these guys make one-on-one, you know, like Chris Dunn's shooting form and helping Markkanen with, you know, some shoot-around drills to try to help him out of his shooting slump. And, you know, we've seen glimpses of that, but not just the basketball stuff, but the leadership. And as these kids turn from kids on rookie deals into in their prime players on big deals, can he still keep that locker room his locker room?
Quickly before we get out of here, Matt, obviously the news about Derrick Rose going to Minnesota. He won't be eligible to play for the Timberwolves if they make the playoffs, which they will. But he won't be eligible.
He will.
He will be eligible to make the playoffs?
Yeah, he will. So he was waived before the March 1st deadline. The players don't have to be signed by that March 1st deadline. They just need to be waived from whatever team they're on. And as a free agent, you can still sign after that and be playoff eligible. So he is playoff eligible.
Wow, so that that might throw an interesting mix into there. So obviously a lot of fans of Derrick Rose were hoping this wasn't the end for him. Going to reunite with Tom Thibodeau, and they can do their weird basketball-y type of things in Minnesota. Obviously no Jimmy Butler there with the recent knee injury that he had, which was devastating. But what do you think, if at all, what kind of impact this is going to have, what he's going to do for that team, or is he just kind of anchor the end of that bench?
I mean, the first impact is that Timberwolves Twitter exploded and everybody's freaking out about Tyus Jones losing minutes. That's the first impact and the first effect of this Derrick Rose signing. And, you know, Tibbs has already spoken to the media a little bit today about the addition of Rose and has said something along the lines of like, well, you know, I can play Rose and Jones and Teague, you know, like three of the two of them can play together, you know, at the same time when Tibbs was asked about having too many point guards. And I'm sorry, but I'm pretty sure didn't Tibbs witness firsthand that trying to play Derek as the two off the ball with, you know, Jimmy as your primary ball handler, that just straight up didn't work, right? So Derek Rose as a two, not effective. An aging Rose that is less explosive and less athletic than he used to be, even less useful as a two playing off the ball. What this Timberwolves team needs is another decent 3-and-D wing. That is what they need. That is what they don't have. That's what they've been missing all season. And to me, I'm happy for Rose that he's going to get another chance here, and we'll see what kind of minutes he gets, if any, significantly. Tibbs did say he may even play. They got a game against the Boston Celtics tonight. He said Rose might play. Well, yeah, they're shorthanded now without Butler, but they added a point guard who really has not shown the league much, didn't look like his full self in Cleveland, was not effective in Cleveland, had a so-so year with the Knicks. I'm happy that Rose is getting another shot, and I wish him the best, but to me, from the perspective of a Timberwolves fan, this makes zero sense. No sense whatsoever.
All I'll say this about this is, if there's anybody in this league, if there's only one person you can pick that can get the very most out of Derrick Rose, or that can have that connection with Derrick Rose like anybody else, it's probably Tom Thibodeau.
Ice.
Now he's got a masked D Rose on the defensive end. Doesn't he know that? I mean, come on.
When he
was young and not hurt, Derrick was not a great defender. Now he's old and hurt, and his defense is even worse.
I will say this, though. If he can return to what he did with the Knicks in that one season, because, I mean, barring before the injury, he was putting up 18-6. I mean, that's pretty solid for a guy that you're going to bring off the bench. And I'm not saying that he's going to return to that. Obviously, another injury to your knee just lessens that possibility. But if there's anybody in this league that can get the most out of Derrick Rose, or can be surprised to turn Derrick Rose around for the one and final chance he's got here, I think it's Tom Thibodeau. So I'm very, very intrigued to see how this plays out, and once the Timberwolves do make the playoffs, how that might factor in. But for all those Derrick Rose fans out there, this is another chance to be able to see your point guard out there playing for a now Timberwolves.
D-Rose stands are going nuts right now. I love it. It's hilarious. But I mean, I'm with you. I am curious as all hell to see how this works out. But I just feel like it's not going to work out very well.
Well, we all can hope and pray, and those Derrick Rose stands out there will hope and pray as well. Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Make sure you're liking us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibels. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. If you're so kind enough, leave us a review on iTunes. Takes 30 seconds. Helps us with the feedback of how we're doing here on the show. You guys have done a fantastic job of leaving us reviews on iTunes and anywhere you listen to podcasts. So please continue to do that if you are so kind. Remember, we're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time on the Nothing But Net channel. DashRadio.com and the Dash Radio app, 100% free, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year of nothing but basketball talk from all your favorite teams. We're there three days a week. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our new text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Send us all your comments, questions, concerns, and voicemails. If you want to leave us a voicemail, we'd love to hear from you and be able to play some of those on our show coming up at the end of the week or sometime next week. So make sure you're hitting that line, 331-979-1369. For Jordan Malley and Matt Peck, we are out. Have a great night, Bulls Nation.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.